This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Today we're going to discuss the economic and investment implications of the strong dollar. And this is David Marchik, Managing Director of External Affairs at Carlisle. So let me begin by outlining the basic facts that we've seen over the last 7 months. Since the end of June 2014, the foreign exchange value of the U.S. dollar has increased by 17% on average against major currencies. And if you exclude the dollar surge that we saw in the midst of the global financial crisis, this is the largest seven-month increase in foreign exchange value of the dollar since 1981. Partially driving this is the fact that 22 central banks have cut interest rates a total of 32 times since September of 14, at the same time as the Fed has signaled that it will raise rates. So obviously a rise in the dollar of this magnitude has significant implications for the global economy, for asset prices, and for the market prices of dollar-invoiced commodities. So joining us on this call are Pete Clare, who heads our U.S. buyout fund, who's been at Carlisle for 23 years, and is currently investing our sixth U.S. buyout fund. Gregor Bohm, the head of our Europe buyout fund, the co-head, who's been here at Carlisle for 18 years and is currently investing our fourth Europe buyout fund. Tomatsu Adachi, the co-head of Carlisle's Japan Fund, an 11-year veteran, and Jason Thomas, our chief economist at Carlisle, and an expert on these issues. Let's start with Jason. Can you talk about the underlying drivers of these large shifts? What's forcing these huge currency fluctuations?
Well, we have a divergence in monetary policy that is the product of a divergence in economic performance. So the United States in 2014 saw an improvement in the labor market that was greater than any time since the mid-90s. Through the 12 months ending in January 2015, the U.S. economy added more jobs than in any year since 1999-2000, when the unemployment rate dipped below 4%. So the U.S. economy has, the labor market has improved quite dramatically. And when you look at the Fed reaction function, how do Fed interest rates respond to these kinds of moves in labor markets, you see a trajectory for interest rates that looks very different today than it looked 2 years ago when the economy was growing at 1.5% and when the unemployment rate was in excess of 7%. So I think that even if there were no response from foreign central banks, it was very likely that the dollar would appreciate based on this new expected trajectory for policy rates. Now, of course, other foreign central banks have responded as oil prices have fallen, as headline inflation rates have come down. Foreign central banks have taken advantage of that, the flexibility that lower energy costs provide to substantially lower their own interest rates, and in the case of the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank, to expand and initiate very large asset purchase programs. So in conjunction, these two effects have led to expectation of higher policy interest rates in the United States relative to those in foreign advanced economies and led to a natural appreciation in the U.S. dollar.
What's the probability of the Fed delaying what they've signaled to be the likely interest rate increases mid-year of this year?
My sense is that the Fed is likely to raise rates in either June or September. Those are two meetings that have the press conference following the FOMC statement, and I suspect that they would like to use those meetings and the subsequent press conference to explain the decision.
Great. Thanks, Jason. So let's turn to Pete. Our LPs manage large portfolios all over the world. What advice do you have for them in terms of their investing and allocation decisions?
Well, for any investor, currency is just one of many variables. It has to be evaluated. So for U.S. dollar investors, you know, a U.S.-focused business is driving, you know, the majority of its revenues from the U.S. market. will do well in 2015, and I think you'll see a lot of strength. For large multinationals, any big multinational companies can give up several points of growth this year simply due to the translation of foreign earnings back into U.S. dollars, and it's clearly going to be a headwind for those companies. For a U.S. dollar investor, when you look outside of the U.S., some markets start to look very interesting, but due to a combination of both valuations and currency. So depending on your appetite for volatility and your investment horizon, I think there could be some interesting opportunities. You know, some of the large markets that we focus on at Carlyle, Europe, Japan, Brazil, valuation multiples are much lower than in the U.S., and you combine that with the declining currencies, start to get very interesting for a U.S. dollar investor. But I also expect both the euro and the Brazilian real to depreciate further this year relative to the dollar. So if you have a short-term time horizon, I would generally, you know, stay away. But if you're investing with a 5 to 7 year time horizon, I think it's very attractive. If you're a euro or yen-based investor, I think this question turns heavily on your time horizon. In the short run, you know, for the next 12 months, the U.S. economy and the U.S. dollar will both perform well, so that it could be attractive for a euro or yen-based investor. However, over the long term, I worry about the sustainability of U.S. valuation multiples, and a very strong dollar today only exacerbates that concern. And I believe the longer the strong dollar lasts, the better the growth prospects will become at home for euro and Japanese-based companies, as large multinationals will look to source more products and more services from those economies due to the cheaper currencies. So for the long run, for allocations you're making today for the next 5 to 7 years, for a euro and yen-based investor, I would tend to stay closer to home in making allocations today.
Gregor Bohm in Europe.
We do have companies where we do not have any effect by the currency fluctuation. And these are typically companies which just generate their sales in one specific market, hospital operator just being active in Germany. So they're not really subject to any kind of currency fluctuation. Then we do have companies with the main activities in Europe. They report in euros, but they sell products in different currencies. And here you really got to differentiate. Some of those companies, in particular the smaller ones, they do have the production base just in the euro area, but they sell outside of the euro area. For them, it's great. They have a big advantage as we speak, because their products are much cheaper now on a U.S. dollar basis than they were one year ago. So either they can compete on price or they can increase the margin. But then we do have also companies which are active in Europe, but they source a lot from China or from the U.S. And they, I have to say, are very negatively impacted. The reason for that is that even though we're hedging them, it will take a while until we are able to recoup the price increases from our customer. And the third bucket of companies are companies which we have in our portfolio, and they are invoicing in U.S. dollars, and they do have also production bases in U.S. dollars. And so for them, it really depends how you look at it, whether it has a positive or negative effect.
Adachi-san, how about you in Japan?
I think we have a more percentage of the companies which are getting positive impact from the depreciated yen. Because Japanese largest industries are, as you know, auto, like Toyota and Honda, and electronics, Sony and Canon. And public data show that they receive 65% to 80% of total sales outside of Japan. And depreciated yen increased its revenue in yen and the value of international assets of those companies substantially. In addition, these sales generate demand for intermediate goods from smaller firms of Japan. So I would say we have more positive impact in our portfolio. But as Gregor said, there are several few pure domestic companies, which are slightly negative, got slight negative impact from the depreciation of yen, because those companies import materials from abroad and they have a increased cost. But having said that, though, the recent dramatic drop of oil is really helping the decrease of the cost. So net impact of import materials is, I would say, neutral for those companies. So generally speaking, I think depreciated yen is definitely very positive to most of the portfolio companies.
In Europe, there's obviously been a move by the central bank to lower interest rates and also quantitative easing. So will all of these factors, Jason, be enough to actually create some growth in both Europe and Japan, which have been largely stagnated for some years?
When you look at Europe right now, you have to be more optimistic about the growth prospects today than at any point since the financial crisis. First, the energy effect. At current exchange rates, the euro area's oil import bill is going to fall by 150 billion euros. So even after accounting for the depreciation, the decline in the price of oil has been so great that you should have about a 70 basis point effect boost to GDP simply as a consequence of the improvement in net exports as there was less expensive oil. Secondly, the ECB, the impact on the foreign exchange rate from the quantitative easing is likely to boost growth by an additional 40 to 50 basis points, again, because you have an export sector that in Europe is so large. You know, you have 50% of French GDP, 55% of German GDP that are exports. You have businesses that, because they recognize that the domestic environment is not so hospitable, have naturally oriented themselves towards export markets. So as a consequence, Europe has a 2-to-1 edge in exports to emerging markets relative to U.S. companies. And I expect that this advantage will likely expand in 2015 as a result of the euro depreciation. With Japan, there's lots of reason for optimism. But as of right now, I think data from our portfolio and externally still point to growth in Japan of about 1.2 to 1.5%. So things look to be improving, but the proof is still in the pudding.
So, Pete, does that mean it's a bad time to invest in the U.S.?
We're micro investors in any macroeconomic environment or any climate. We can find great businesses that are category killers in their sectors to invest in. And we can also find companies that are crying out for operational improvement. The U.S. is in this conundrum now. I think where the better the U.S. economy performs, the better the U.S. dollar performs at 15, the harder it's going to be on the U.S. economy in 2016 and 17. So I think it depends. You got to watch how all these different variables move. But there is one scenario that becomes very positive for Europe and Japanese-based companies, which in a funny way happens if the U.S. economy performs great this year. It starts to make valuations in some ways perhaps cheaper in those parts of the world, but long-term economic growth prospects will get better in those parts of the world.
Jason, what's the impact of the dollar appreciation on the Chinese economy?
With China, I think that the clear policy objective, foreign exchange policy objective from the People's Bank of China, is to create two-way risk in the currency. For so long, renminbi has been a one-way bet that there was expected appreciation against the U.S. dollar. That essentially ended in the first quarter of 2014 when the RMB depreciated against the dollar, and there was large losses inflicted on highly leveraged investors. So I don't expect that the RMB is going to make any dramatic move downward against the dollar. Perhaps if the dollar strengthens this year, if there's another 10% appreciation or so as a result of a higher U.S. policy interest rates, there may be an incentive to have a low single-digit depreciation against the RMB. Again, not because policymakers want a weak RMB, simply because dollar strength is too much and riding the dollar up against all of its trading partners is probably not the position that policymakers in China want their currency to be in.
Your perspectives on investments in China?
I'm bullish on China, and I think it's a huge market. Consumer demand is growing. Wages are rising. That's all very positive. I do think that in order to stimulate their economy, the government of China does have a large interest in seeing the renminbi depreciate a little bit or not follow the dollar up as strongly. And I think they'll take action, so that's the outcome. And that's going to be very positive for the Chinese economy.
Yeah, I have a very positive view too, especially the companies we are investing. As I said before, they are trying to expand the business outside of Japan, and you know, the biggest market is China, of course. And there are a lot of opportunities for Japanese companies to enter that market. So, you know, the currency situation may be different, but I think in terms of the market opportunity and the growth potential, I think China is still a very attractive place.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at carlisle.com. This has been a Carlisle ValueCast podcast.